Hey guys, welcome to a little special edition Cyclone Fanatic podcast here at CycloneFanatic.com, of course. It is Senior Day Eve. We want to give a quick shout out to our friends at Mr. B Clothing down at 1995 Northwest 86th Street in Clive. Tim Sitzman, my man. Going down there. The spring is in the air. Get yourself a nice little spring wardrobe. It's Kentucky Derby season coming up. Brent Bloom. Senior Day Eve. That's all we're talking about tonight here from the home office of CycloneFanatic.com in beautiful Bondurant. We're going to talk George Niang for about an hour. We'll mention the other guys, but this is, you know, senior days are a little weird, just in the sense you go through these twice a year.
Right.
It could be really, especially in football, it's like, man, you're celebrating all these guys. They didn't really win a lot. This is just a whole different animal since we've been covering Iowa State for well over a decade now. We've never seen anything like what will be at Hilton Coliseum on Monday.
Well, and people, Melvin Edgem's a good comparison, but yeah. I don't think Edgem had quite the accolades and connection that George did. Not to say that Melvin wasn't a huge part of rebuilding the Iowa State program. He was. But, I mean, if you gave me one of the two who has been a bigger impact on Iowa State, I'd probably lean George Niang, and it's just all of the factors. It's the production, it's the scoring, it's the connection with the fan base, it's the social media. He did everything that a modern athlete that has never been done before at Iowa State, and just a special impact on Iowa State. And I can't think of – I mean, I was trying to think connected to football. You know, maybe Austin Arnott, he wasn't at George's level.
No.
But that's – it's just unique in that a guy stays 4 years, has the success on the playing field, and has the accolades off as well. I mean, you've closer to it than I am, but I've never heard somebody in Ames have a bad thing to say about George Niang, and that's pretty impressive considering he's been there 4 years.
Well, I'll put it this way, and this will be, I think, a good place to start our conversation here. Stack him up. Don't think about numbers, okay?
Right.
Don't think about any. I know you're a stats driven guy. Against Marcus Fizer and Jamal Tinsley. Now, for me, I came in on this a little bit later than
sure.
You did, admittedly. So this is why I want to go to your expertise here. However, for me, like the emotional type of connection that I feel fan to player,
sure,
is nowhere close with those two guys as it is with George Niang. Now, George has had a lot going for him that those two guys didn't have, like Twitter, YouTube
right.
videos.
Right.
Like, there was a lot of stuff that we knew about George before he ever stepped foot on Iowa State's campus. But to me, just that has nothing to do with stats, has nothing to do with wins, numbers of starts. I don't care about any of that. Like, there's some weird connection there that I can't exactly describe.
Yeah, and Marcus was here for 3 years. Jamal was two. It'd be a really interesting argument, and I don't want to do it today, but I still think from a dominant player on the floor, Fizer and Tinsley, I mean, they're in the conversation with
yeah.
George.
Maybe. I think that's
very
they're
fair. Probably above George
I think
from on-the-floor
Fizer
production.
For sure.
Yeah, Fizer for sure. And then Jamal, I mean, Jamal didn't lose a home game. And he won two Big 12 titles. Like, that's
pretty tough to do.
Pretty impressive. And he was an All-American and all that stuff. But, I mean, that's here and there for this conversation. But you're right. The fact that it's the connection with the fans and, like, people feel it's in a weird way. Because I wrote about this a month ago. And it remains true. George is almost like a second cousin or something for Iowa State fans. Because you're with him, seemingly, every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday night.
Yeah.
And he's just been a part of what you do for 4 hours every week for the last four winters. Like, that, people have probably hung out at Hilton Coliseum more watching that guy than they have some of their relatives. And so I think there's that connection there where
they probably like him more than their relatives.
Yeah, they might in a lot of cases. So it is. He seems like he's been around forever. And that's why it's weird that this will be the last time on Monday night that he'll take the floor at Hilton Coliseum, because he's the type that feels like he's been around for 20 years. And not to mention the success on the floor as well, and the numbers are incredible. But you're right, it's the connection that is hard to quantify, really.
Let's go back when he committed. Well, let's go back when he first visited Iowa State. I'll never forget it. I was in actually Seattle, Washington. My wife was she was in vet school, her fourth year of vet school. So they have these rotations all over the country. And for the young Cyclone fans who are listening, believe it or not, there was a day when we didn't go to NCAA tournaments.
It was rough.
So when March rolled around, it was like, okay, I'm good to book a vacation.
Right, there we go.
Iowa State's not going to be in the postseason. And that's exactly what I did that year. I followed Ashley out there, and when she was doing her rotations, I'd work during the day in the hotel, and I'm making these recruiting calls of guys who were fresh on the mind of Fred Hoiberg, who was building a program at the time. And the one guy they were really high on, his name was George Niang. And I'll never forget the first time I called him. He sounded and talked just like he did now. He talked about how Fred had compared him to Kevin Love, which we heard that one quite a bit over the years. Kevin Love actually called into the call-in show at one point, right?
Yep. Him and Fred are buddies.
George had never been to Iowa before. So he was going to fly in the next week, and he was going to take unofficial visits to Iowa and Iowa State.
Right.
Fran McCaffrey just was getting the ball rolling there, too.
And that's the thing. Iowa was heavily involved as well.
Yes. Probably, I think, a little bit earlier even, just because of Fran's Siena deal. Like
right.
George
connect
was,
to the East Coast
George
football.
Was that type of a player there. Like we joke about Nerlens Noel, but playing behind Nerlens Noel at first really shielded a lot of the really good teams from – recruiting George Niang. Iowa State, I believe Texas A&M, Iowa were really the first to look at him as a high major prospect.
Well, I believe the story goes Fred had a connection. So George's AAU coach was Leo Papil, who was in the Boston Celtics organization as like a player personnel guy, but he also coached AAU on the side. And Fred, with his experience at the T-Wolves, gets a call from Papil and saying, you need to come out and at least give this kid a look at a shoot-around because I think he's got high major potential. Nobody's really looking at him yet. And so Fred gets on a plane, goes to the shoot-around, and I guess apparently offered him on the spot or at least offered him to come out and visit Ames. And if not for Fred's NBA connections, which he talked so much about in his press conference, they probably don't get in on George early enough for him to even come out and consider Iowa State. So that Leo Papil connection – was what got Fred into the door, and then Iowa State was one of the first high majors to offer, and that led to the visit.
It did, and I think that throughout that AAU summer, I mean, they were in the Peach Jam. They were doing all sorts of great things. George's recruiting starts to pick up. This is after he's committed to Iowa State, I remember.
He visited in March and committed in May.
May 15th, 2011, I believe, was the year that he committed. First anniversary to my wife, believe it or not.
How about that? I'm sure you spent your one-year anniversary writing about George Niang.
What I do remember is towards the end there, like UConn got in, Florida, Billy Donovan really wanted him towards the end. But no, the thing I remember about the pre-Iowa State George Niang the most was being the student body president at the Tilton School. Like I called George one time, just a standard recruiting call. Hey, how are things going? What's you working out? When you're on that type of a beat, that's what you do. And Niang was in like some serious board meeting with the student body there at the Tilton School, and he was just like, he's always been that guy. He's always been, you know how George will, I think it's a little bit of an uncomfortable thing for him where he feels uncomfortable. He'll tell some joke, laugh at it,
right.
And then
move on. Yeah.
He's had that cadence about him in these interviews for so long. I guess that's what I always come back to this guy, where he really, we've seen him grow, like his body change. We've seen his game evolve. We have not seen a difference in a young man, though, compared to the day he first stepped on campus.
Has he ever not showing up for an interview? I mean, I think that's the...
I don't remember once.
He's just always been accessible, even in tough times. And that's almost when he's at his best.
Yeah.
Is when Iowa State loses.
The Ohio State?
Yeah. Everybody wants to talk to George because they know he'll tell you, he'll be honest with you for one. And it's not just the cliches all the time either. But yet, he's likable because of it. And he's always shown up and answered the tough questions every single time. And you know, as great as his career has been, he has been through some really painful events, but he's shown up every single time to answer the questions and face the music. And I mean, that's you can't respect the guy anymore.
Before we get into some of those painful events, and I do want to touch on some of our favorite and most heartbreaking George Niang moments. It wouldn't be Iowa State if there aren't some heartbreaking.
No, that's part of why
moments.
He's
part of why we love him.
He's a typical or the perfect Cyclone in a way.
I want to see if you remember this conversation because I know that you were with me. We were out golfing with then Iowa State assistant coach T.J. Otzelberger at the time. Niang was signed, and do you remember when he told us that this guy would probably have his jersey hung? He would probably pass Fred Hoiberg in the scoring numbers. He would be that type of a player at Iowa State. Now that it's done, or they're completely done, but
yeah.
I want to give Otzelberger credit because he told us that before Niang had ever. I think that George had been on campus for like a couple of weeks.
Right, and they knew.
And they knew that. They knew it from day one. It was incredible. And that was when George, pardon our French, but he was a little tubby at the time.
He was.
You know, this wasn't not like he's like a chiseled godfather out there right now, but I mean, come on. Like, he was a little bit chunky when he got into town.
If you watch, get on Cyclones TV, watch some of those early games when he was a freshman. He was. He was kind of a, a little chunky, and he had the goatee. He had the goatee to try and make himself look a little older.
Yep.
He just wasn't really comfortable, but he always scored. He could always score. I mean, he put up a double-double in his first game against Southern. And he was like 16 and 13.
Southern.
And at that time, Percy Gibson was supposed to be the stud. I mean, Percy Gibson was the starter for the first half of Georgia's freshman year because he had just come off that year with Royce where Percy all he had to do was –
Percy,
catch the ball and dunk the
Percy
ball.
Shot like 60% that his freshman year, right?
Yeah, but then he was supposed to be like this 3-year starter is going to be the Iowa State post of the future. And George was this undersized, chunky kid from Boston who just outplayed him from the get-go.
Yeah.
And by the end of the year, Percy was essentially just on the bench and it rendered him transferable, really. And he scored from the get-go. He showed his impact. Fred was talking about him after his first game, like he's going to be a transformational player, and they knew. I think they knew just based on practice, and we had gotten reports. Niang's really good. I mean, you hear that at people at open gyms, like he just you won't believe it just looking at it, but he can score.
Yeah,
that was the number one thing all along. He's scoring on everybody. I mean, he was from the day he stepped on campus, the guy could score the ball, and I think that has never stopped.
In the early Niang years. The one game that pops out at me was a game that they lost, actually, the one at Carver Hawkeye Arena. Was that his freshman year?
Yes.
Yeah, because nobody could do anything except George. Do you remember that? And I mean, he kept them in that game single-handedly. That was when I go, okay, this guy's a leader.
And he came off the bench then.
Yes.
Yeah, because that
his
team,
first start, which I want to get to next.
Yeah, but that team was very odd. It was an odd team. They were a bunch of misfits. And somehow, as a freshman, he actually became the leader of
yes.
the team. Because it was
crazy.
Corey Lucius, Will Clyburn.
Who, I mean, there was no assertion
quiet.
There.
No,
yeah.
They're both pretty quiet guys. And then you had Tyrus is pretty quiet. George. Chris Babb was a good leader.
Yeah, Naz was on the bench.
He didn't really do anything. I mean, they just didn't have a real vocal guy. George, as a freshman, became the leader of that team. And they were kind of a little aimless there for a while after that. I mean, Iowa beat them by 10.
Yeah.
I mean, George kind of kept them in the game, but they had lost to Cincinnati.
I just remember George was the only one who did anything in that first half of that game at Iowa City.
He
started like 5 for 5, I want to say, off the top of my head.
He kept them afloat, really, because there was times during his freshman season where they were not going to be an NCAA tournament team, but they found a way. I mean, they put it together.
Well,
Big 12 conference play.
I don't think anybody thought they would be when you started the Big 12. And, and Hoiberg makes this curious decision to go to the bench and start this true freshman at Allen Fieldhouse in the Big 12 opener that will go down in infamy as the Ben McLemore bank shot game.
Yeah.
But I knew I loved Niang when – now, you correct me if I'm wrong here. I didn't do any – this is all top of the head. Didn't he get teed up? In Allen Fieldhouse?
I believe so, late in that – or
early in that
in the game.
Yeah. I want to say after
– he bumped somebody or
something.
He hit
a three and trash-talked somebody
right.
and gets teed up,
yeah.
and this is his first start.
That's right.
And that was like – I'm like to myself – I didn't cover that game. I was sitting there courtside, and I thought to myself, like, oh, man, I freaking love this guy. Like, this is my kind of dude right here.
Well, that first possession – he gets a start and he hits a three in Jeff Withey's face.
Yes.
I mean, just like who takes a
Jeff
shot?
Jeff Withey, the defensive player of the year in the Big 12.
Who takes that shot for one? He never has cared. He will take any shot. And then just yeah, but he played okay in that game. I think he scored like 8 or 10 points, but that's a game.
But it was just the balls to take the shot, make the shot, and then
talk
trash to Jeff Withey after you do it.
And then even the Ohio State game, he did what everybody wanted to do, and he elbowed Aaron Kraft in the middle of a timeout or on the way to a timeout and just kind of did the arms up thing where so much of that other stuff where no fan base really can like that guy except for Iowa State. But, I mean, he's just beloved in Ames.
But he never really took it too
far.
It
wasn't flagrant ever. It wasn't
– he blew a kiss to the Iowa student section. He didn't flip them off.
Right.
He never – he kept it very PG-13,
right,
and very lovable. Like his relationship with the Iowa fan base is just epic. The cup of coffee, it's a Cyclone State sitting next to Fred Hoiberg in a press conference.
Even after this, after the game this year, he's like, well, just hope the Iowa fans know I'll always be 3-1 against them.
Yeah, and then it was just a really subtle man, they just completely melted down or whatever he said about him. Like he genuinely does not like Iowa. But he always kept it fun, I think. Oh man, he is what did Dan McCartney used to say about our friend
Mike Leach?
Mike Leach, he's a dandy.
Yep,
he's a dandy talking Georgian Yanks.
Yeah, it's and then you just get to the production on the floor too, and it's incredible. I mean, it's Barry Stevens or it's Jeff Greer, Barry Stevens, Georgian Yang. I mean, that's pretty cool if you think about it. And for those of us who weren't fortunate enough to really watch Greer and Stevens, because that was, yeah, I mean, that's in the 80s, and I've seen replays, but I don't remember them. I don't remember Jeff Hornacek playing at Iowa State. I don't. I mean, I wish I would have seen him. I remember Fred, of course, but George is at that level. Like, this is a guy who 30 years from now, we will tell the next generation of Iowa State fans, oh, I wish you would have been able to see George Niang play. And you could really appreciate. And he's one of those players who, a lot like Monte, where you have to see him game in and game out to really fully appreciate what he does. Because the numbers are good, but it's really the combination of things where he always seems to make a big shot. Like even against K-State on Saturday, they're struggling in the first half. He gets 2 threes in a row to get him back in the game. Just stuff like that where it adds up over time, and he seems like he has done it time and time again.
What's your favorite George Niang moment? Mine is Kansas. I know it's probably a little bit obscure for a lot of fans because George has hit so many big shots, won so many big games. Of course, there were all the great moments down in Kansas City with the Big 12 tournament and hopefully some more coming up next week. Mine was the Kansas game just because, to me, it set the tone on what this young man is going to stand for during his career at Iowa State. What stands out to you?
One for me was against Kansas in the semi as a sophomore year.
Okay.
I've watched a lot of Iowa State basketball games. That second half they played was the best offensive display I've ever seen. Keep in mind, Kansas is a top five defensive team. And George Niang is going up against a future NBA player, a couple of them, and Tarik Black. And, of course, they had Wiggins on that team. Embiid's not playing. But they ran their entire offense that second half through George Niang. And we are sitting on Iowa State's floor, where we sit in the Big 12,
yep.
Just on the sideline there. And he absolutely went to work the entire second half. They couldn't stop him. It was like a boxing match where it was a TKO. They couldn't stop the guy.
Was that the same year as the Niang?
Yeah, and then that's when he got
jacked in the face.
So he just took over that game with help, obviously, from Kane and Edgem and the rest of them. And then he goes out with getting elbowed in the face, and he has the towel on his eye or just above his eye, and he's pumping his fist like at the Jersey Shore on the way outside to the locker room. And he says after the game, there goes my modeling career. Like that was George Niang in the perfect half hour time span because he just worked over Kansas. They couldn't stop him. They could not guard him one-on-one. He's hitting threes, and then he takes a charge, which he takes charges occasionally, but then to fire up the fan base, have a quote afterwards that summed it up, and then go win Iowa State the first Big 12 championship the next day with the patch over his eye.
Do you remember the Niangian hysteria down?
Yes.
Because the next day, Iowa State played Baylor, and every Kansas and Kansas State fan was gone. They had all gotten out of there.
Right.
It was, I mean, there were maybe 10 Baylor fans in all of Kansas. And they're all Scott Drew's relatives, okay? Right. Like, it was all Iowa State. And I'll never forget walking around the pep rally in the Power and Light District and just seeing all the people with Band-Aids under their eyes and the yanging craze that took over.
Right. That was – I mean, that building seats, what, 18, 20,000?
Yep.
I mean, it was 17,000 Iowa State fans. And they had struggled the first half of that Baylor game, but then came back and played well. But, yeah, even Walters put on a Band-Aid for the yanging just to join in on the craze. But that was a neat moment and kind of summarized how much people felt about that guy. And it's just sad then the next game he'd play after Baylor was North Carolina Central and then how that unfolded.
Yeah, let's go there right now. Before we do that, I want to give a shout-out to our friends at the Iowa Clinic Men's Center. My God, did I need Dr. Nicholson last week. That guy, I'm not kidding.
You live, though.
I did, but their endorsements, and then they're like real endorsements.
Right.
And if it were not for Dr. Nicholson last week and everybody at the urgent care at Iowa Clinic in Ankeny, my God, they were awesome. They were lifesavers. So shout out to them, iamenscenter.com. I'll tell you more about that later in the week. I want to keep focus on George Niang and his illustrious career at Iowa State right now. And we go to the NC Central game.
Right.
And I guess my recollection of it, sitting – Iowa State has a comfortable lead in San Antonio. And Niang keeps playing. You see him come down weird on this foot, and he continues to score.
Scored 8 points.
Yeah. He scores 8 points, and then he gets taken out by Fred Hoiberg. And – you just start to see like a weird reaction from Vic Miller.
Who's the trainer.
Yep, Iowa State's trainer on the bench. George goes to the back, and it got very eerie. And what I'll never forget, I will never in my career forget that locker room after the game, a double-digit win in the NCAA tournament, an impressive one, too.
They rolled them in the second half.
And there are grown men with tears in their eyes, including George Niang, for the second year in a row in the NCAA tournament, because another one of my favorite Niang moments would have been after the NCAA tournament, his freshman year, that Ohio State game. Just, you know, this freshman who's putting it all on him, the loss.
Yeah, he blamed the entire thing on him.
Blamed the whole loss on him, and I'm like, I love this guy even more. But breaks the foot, and, we get North Carolina in 2 days as well. What a... And I guess, Brent, I'll put it on a tee here for you to go on, because there's still a guy I know pretty well who's the head coach of the Chicago Bulls that is convinced, had George Niang not lost that game, Iowa State has a national championship banner.
I think that's an argument that can be made. But I wasn't down in San Antonio, but the interview with Fred after the game, and he looked like somebody...
Well, he cussed.
Yeah. I mean, he
got caught dropping an F-bomb on TV.
Yeah, because they showed him when he heard... And then Sager, I think it was Sager, interviewed him, Craig Sager, and you could tell that all was not well in Fred Hoiberg land. And the fact that they actually won against North Carolina was a neat comeback. And
Daniel Adozie started that
game. Adozie started it. But, and then they lose by, what, 5 to UConn?
And it took 34 out of Dustin Hoge in Madison Square Garden, but that just shows you
they
how.
They didn't have a guy to guard.
No.
That type of player. I mean, they had the big guy, Brema, who's 7'1".
Yeah.
And then they had Daniels, who was 6'9", an average defender. Gafai couldn't have guarded Niang. Like, they wouldn't have had a guy to guard all three of Niang, Edgem, and Hoge. They would have lit him up. They would have beat him. They would have beat Connecticut. There's no question. And then once they get there, it's Michigan State in the next round. And who knows from there? Connecticut won the national title that season. And so I think the argument is fair that nobody at the time, I mean, the way Iowa State was running offense, there was nobody that could match them. I mean, they blitzed through the Big 12. They made North Carolina Central look silly. And then DeAndre Kane was at a filthy level as well. I mean, they had Kane, Niang, Edgem, Naz Long was hitting shots at the time. Monte Morris was playing at a high level.
Hoge was getting like 15 rebounds.
And then you forget
Hoge,
right? I mean, they had their six at the time were unbelievable. And then Matt Thomas was a spot player. He played some minutes as well. They were so good towards the end of that season that it always makes you wonder. And that's the thing with George Niang, is there's always he was this fantastic player, but at the end of the day, there's always been a snake bite there at the end of it. I mean, the Ohio State thing where he was good. He essentially helped them beat Notre Dame. He had a career-high 19. Got to the next round. And then he gets, of all people, switched up on Aaron Kraft on that last-second shot.
Yeah.
And Kraft drills a three in his face. And it's just things like that. He was the one who took the charge that wasn't called against Kansas and Hilton when Kansas ended up winning and the fans went crazy. There's just he's just been like this Forrest Gump of Iowa State, where he's always been on the scene the last 4 years, and for good times and bad times.
It's a really good way to put it, the Forrest Gump comparison. Junior year, I think the junior year, and I'd love to go back when George is well past his career at Iowa State. I would love to write a book about that team. Like, nobody would buy it because the last two years have been. I mean, I think Steve Prohm's first year, yeah, I think you're right.
Like, the whole transition was wild.
I mean, I would love to have, like, okay, here's 5-6 cups of coffee, George, yeah, and we're going to sit here, and I want you to tell me, like, your recollection of your final 2 years at Iowa State. Because, well, you can't get to George's senior year without talking about first UAB happens.
Right.
And then Hoiberg watch.
And then Niang was the one who missed that last shot against UAB. He was the one trapped in the corner. Might have been a foul, but they didn't call it. But he was right in the middle of that, too.
Hoiberg watch.
Yep.
You get a new coach.
Yep.
And then your best friend, who you've been there from day one and roomed with, goes down. And Naz Mitru Long. And I will say this. And it's not because of beating Kansas State by 19. And I want to keep this focus more on Niang and less on the next couple of weeks, of course. But I do think that Steve Prohm has played the chess pieces of this team pretty well, all things considered, to get them playing their best basketball of the year, to give them a shot to win in March.
Correct.
And that is when George Niang's final chapter will be written. It's not going to be UAB.
No, it's not. And there's a lot that's going to happen in the next 2 weeks. So it's coming, and that's the weird part. It's coming. You want to see what happens, but you also kind of know that the end is near. And I hope it's a high note, but only one team wins the national championship. So we shall see. But no, I agree. I think he has, through all of the craziness this last 12 months. But he's always been the steady guy.
He's
just always been him and Monte. I mean, I'll throw Monte in there too. I mean, Monte's never taken a day off.
What about Melvin Edgem? I think that you put all three of those guys in the same type of category.
Yeah, no question. Edgem. I mean, Edgem
just
handled the transition
time
as well. From
people forget that Greg McDermott recruited Melvin Edgem.
Right.
More like T.J. Otzelberger did under the Greg McDermott,
and he hung on with Fred,
who was held over. But like, I don't. That's one of the things that makes George so vital to me, though, with this program is you used the term bunch of misfits earlier.
Yeah.
Iowa State hasn't recruited bad kids. Like, there's really, no. I mean, if you look, like, they're not getting into trouble. They're different personalities, though, who he has had to lead for 4 years.
Yeah, there's some difficult.
Bryce Dijon Jones is doing very well right now, and I'm very happy for him. Yes. I think that's a fantastic story.
Even DeAndre Kane had his issues.
Yes.
The first team he was on had issues.
Think about
Clyburn and Lucius. And
think about the transformation we've seen in Matt Thomas from the day he stepped on campus to the kid he is right now. And how much credit you give George Niang for that? Because I know how much Matt looks up to George. There's been a lot of coaching there the whole way. And that's why when I have the argument all the time that Melvin deserves his jersey to be retired too. And I get the other side. But I think if people knew exactly how valuable behind the scenes Melvin Edgem was to the creation of what Iowa State basketball is today, if I could put that on paper,
yeah,
I think it would be a no-brainer. However, you just can't do things like that. But there's that aspect of this Niang conversation as well that I think takes us into a whole other conversation.
Well, I think he always kept everybody loose. And if you're with the team at all, everybody kind of looks at George to see how – And if you ask, why is the team confident all the time? Oh, it's Fred. Fred gave him confidence. Prohm gives him confidence. But I think maybe more than any of those two, it was George. Just the way, like we talked about earlier, anytime there's a shot, he's going to take it. It doesn't matter the situation. He's taking the shot. And I still remember I was on the team bus because I did a game filling in for Eric Heff down in TCU during George's sophomore year. The game gets over. And DeAndre Kane was kind of a bigger-than-life personality. I mean, he and George would just talk at each other all the time. And DeAndre Kane's going on and on. He's, again, a very confident personality, saying how last year Chris Babb couldn't guard him on Iowa State. I'm saying, you know, nobody could guard me. I'm a great offensive player. Chris Babb couldn't guard me. And so Niang, in perfect timing, like a comedian, gets out his phone, pulls up a box score of a Marshall Southern Miss game the year prior, where DeAndre Kane played in for Marshall. And he screams so the whole bus can hear, "DeAndre, you scored 4 points and had 11 turnovers against Southern Miss. I think Chris Babb could guard you last year." And so just kind of shut him down the whole time. So you've got this 24-year-old Kane who is just this veteran personality, and Niang's just a sophomore, but he controlled the room. Any room he was in, he controlled. And I think everybody still looks at him as the one to be a leader, and he's been the leader since day one. But just stuff like that where kept everybody loose.
It's a great story.
Keeps everybody confident, and as long as your Niang's on your team, you know you have a chance to win because the guy can score.
That's why I still like Iowa State this year in the NCAA tournament.
I agree.
Let's take a couple minutes, Brent, before we wrap this up to focus on the other seniors for tonight. Let's start with Abdul Nader, who he didn't play very well on Saturday against Kansas State. However, the games prior, I mean, he had put together the best streak of basketball he's played at Iowa State. They're going to need that type of effort from him to make a run in the NCAA tournament. However, I've seen it just personally, just covering the team, where he wasn't a great guy to be around, I would say.
Sure.
His junior year. And the only reason, not a bad guy, he just, you could tell
kinda
he was
shy.
Yeah, uncomfortable with the media. He just kind of kept to himself, and that was okay. Not everybody's George. I fully respect that. This year, he's just been a different guy, though. I mean, he smiles a lot more. He's got a little more pep in his step, and I think we've all seen that as well. I'm glad that he's had these games toward the end of his senior season, because I think that, well, not only is it good for Iowa State, but very deserving for the young man who I know has worked really hard over the last 365 days to get where he is.
I mean, he could be in the conversation for a third team All Big 12 or honorable mention. He's played really well, and he's a guy who's always had the talents. It's just putting it all together, and it's nice that he had a three or four game streak there where he put it together. And they're obviously going to need him, but you know he's going to graduate. Already got his degree. I think he already did graduate.
He did.
So,
yes.
So that's you know taken. That's cool. I mean, the kid who transferred from Northern Illinois had a little difficulty over there, but comes to Iowa State. And this summer, he thought about leaving because he was, you know, Fred left. He didn't know if he wanted to stay and play for Prohm. But from day one, remember in fall camp, Prohm singled him out right away, that Abdul's a guy that's bought in, and he's bought in all year. And it's been great to see him as a starter and be productive and go out his career on a high note. And I think people have fond memories generally of Abdul's senior year.
And there's Jameel McKay. Did you see Jameel's press conference after the Kansas State game? Did you watch it?
I did not.
I got to tell you, I've never been more impressed with Jameel McKay.
Good.
On or off the floor. His answers were simply, "I want to do everything I can to make sure George is remembered as the best Cyclone of all time." Hmm. The fact that he went that direction was very impressive to me. Now, I'll say this, too. I don't trust Jameel quite yet. Like,
sure.
I think he's a good kid. Like, I think a lot of this is misplaced.
Agreed.
However, he's just very emotional. He probably should have stayed off Twitter one too many times. But I loved the route that he went after that game. So I'm going to give him the benefit of doubt, because I like rooting for people, and I like looking glass half full. So that's what I'm going to do with Jameel McKay, and I'm going to say that he'll finish out his senior season in a way that everybody, himself included, can be proud of.
Well, that's the K-State thing. I think that's why fans have had such, you know, they've wanted so much more from Jameel this year, is they see that. I mean, he gives, 14 and 16 or something like that, had three blocks, played great minutes, and we saw that for
17 rebounds.
Yeah, or a good portion of last year as well. And so you see that and you go, okay, this is the one. If we can have it every night, I mean, that's what Jameel can do. And if he plays at that level, I mean, he can make a career professionally playing basketball. And so you hope that he continues to do that. But he's gotten a bad rap this year with some of the stuff. The suspensions, again, I mean, he's not, like you said, he's not a bad guy. It's not legal stuff that's happening.
No.
He's just, he hasn't quite been on the same page, and so hopefully they are on the same page now heading to March, and we'll remember Jameel not for the dramatic stuff this year, but for the positives, for the way it ended, because like him, like Abdul, are a guy that had to choose Iowa State when they transferred, and they came to Ames because they wanted to play for a winner, and they have. And so you hope that they make a run in March to have those guys remembered more for what they've done in March and rather than some of the other stuff.
I think we're going to look back on it, and I hope this is the case, and I think we're going to look back at the coaching job that Prohm did, just the chess pieces that he maneuvered around when he did during the season, and we're gonna go, wow, that was pretty borderline brilliant. I do. I'm not – this is not the Cyclone Fanatic guys propping up the head coach. I just – the way these guys – the they're playing – doesn't it look like they're playing for each other, even at West Virginia?
Yeah,
even
I
in
thought
a
they
loss.
Played a lot harder the last week. And Prohm probably sacrificed at least the win against Texas Tech down there. I think if Jameel plays in that game –
damn near Oklahoma State.
And maybe Oklahoma State as well, even K-State when he didn't play Hallis Cook.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that those decisions may result in not competing for a Big 12 championship. And honestly, Kansas wins it even with those guys, probably.
Probably, yes.
I don't think there's any question. But the goal was always, how can we maximize ourselves for March? And nobody will remember that team finished fifth or sixth in the Big 12. They'll remember if they make it to the Elite Eight or in March and make a run. So we'll see what happens. But I agree. I think right now this is the best, at least the second half against K-State, the best this group has looked together all season.
I think Oklahoma State, Iowa State's a 13-point favorite heading into that game. That's where it opened at least. Depending on when you're listening to this, it could have changed by now. This comes at a perfect time, too. I think that there's something very good mentally that could happen with this team for waxing a couple of people.
No doubt.
And they needed to do that. They haven't. It's been a long time since this
stressful.
Team.
It's been stressful.
Yeah, it's been a very stressful mm-hmm. season. I mean, you think as a fan you have been. Think about if you're a player or a coach in that locker room right now. So, I think Oklahoma State comes at a good time. I think Iowa State absolutely waxes them on Monday, and I really don't have any hesitation saying that either. I don't see how Oklahoma State's within 15 in that basketball game. And Steve Prohm's going a little bit Bill Finley style. He said this after the game Saturday, Brent, where he wants the guys to do a little deal after the game where they address the crowd. We've never in my career seen that from a men's program. Bill Finley does that every year, and that's always – one of my favorite nights with the women. We're unabashed women's basketball supporters.
Yep.
I love those girls. And that's always a cool moment for them to be able to, you know, can you imagine what Niang will have to say if it's following an Iowa State win?
Right. And that's going to be, no one's going to leave that building.
No.
So talk about a year to implement that is when maybe the most comfortable guy with a mic in his hand,
the
most productive player.
You think Niang has a future in TV? Honest question.
If he wants to, yeah.
Where is Niang in 5 years from now? I think he's a second-round draft pick.
He'll play basketball until he wants to hang it up for 15 years.
Larry,
it's just a question is this game NBA ready from a – and I – there's no skill-wise he'd fit. He'd be fine. It's just the athleticism and the defensively is going to be the knocks on him. I think he will get drafted in the second round.
Larry Bird drafts him in the second round.
And then if that
– call my shot.
At least have a shot. I mean, he's going to get – he'll be on a summer league team.
Yeah.
And I think at that point, he's the type once he gets into – on your team, and you're like, this guy can score. I got to give him a look. And you've heard Larry has a fascination.
I've got an NBA source who's told me this. And then any chance, because I have heard this thrown out there as well, any chance that Abdul Nader turns into this year's BDJ who...
Oh, I think he'll get a summer league invite for sure.
In my opinion, like of the three guys, he's the best NBA...
From an athleticism standpoint and the skills that league wants, yeah. If he's got the length, he's got everything you want for an NBA three-man, and it's just a matter of can he put it together. He's going to get an invite, no question.
What about McKay?
And McKay's right on the borderline. He's athletically, I mean, as far as, you know, the 7'4 wingspan, he can jump, he can run, he can do all those things. I mean, he obviously needs to be bigger weight-wise. I just don't know if that's ever going to happen.
You don't see guys McKay's build with that type of an offensive game, like lack thereof.
Right.
He's usually guys who look like that need to be able to shoot or, you know, do something.
But he's another one who, with his athleticism, he will at least get a look in a summer league, I think.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of players on those summer league teams.
Yeah, it, understood.
And all
most of the second rounders don't make it anyways. Like, well,
no,
we're gonna keep that.
No, I don't. I well. Don't do Abdul and Jameel won't be drafted. I'm pretty confident there. But
do you think George will? You
think,
agree with me?
I think George is right on the somebody will take a flyer on him late just to have him under control so they can get a good look at him.
And I'll say this too, a little bit off topic. But I had another good source over the weekend. There's not a lot of Monte Morris in the NBA talk.
Good.
Now, that could change.
Yep.
But now, Brent, you're really good at this. This is a heavy NBA point guard draft, right?
Yeah. There's five or six good ones this year.
I heard that, and this could be too, Monte is just so focused on this year that they haven't thought about it, but – right now, I mean, it looks like Monte's planning on coming back. And now, again, don't go and run and say, oh, Williams is reporting it's a done deal, because it's not. They're going to – I'm sure Fred Hoiberg will have his hands in helping them out and whatnot. But right now, I think Monte will be back.
Well, of all the players on Iowa State's roster who would get drafted after this year, he would be a guaranteed second-round pick right now. It's just, again, in the NBA, you're not guaranteed contracts unless you're a first-rounder. And so that's the – that's the fine line.
It makes more sense to come back and get your degree, and then
you're right. And then look at Buddy Hield this year. Probably he's not a first round pick coming out.
He's not going to be.
No, last year.
Oh, okay.
If he comes out last year, you thought about it.
I was going to say, there's no way.
But now he's a top 15 pick, no question. Probably top 10. I mean, he has helped himself. I think Monte is a player that can help himself, and he's young too. So this is the issue. Everyone's like, well, you don't see many seniors anymore in college basketball. A lot of those guys have, you know, they played a year in prep school. And by the time they get to their freshman year, they're 20 years old. Well, Monte came in as young 18.
Yeah.
So I think he just turned 21. He might not be 21 yet.
Wasn't
so
DeAndre young. 24?
He was 24 as a senior at Iowa State.
When Monte was guarding him as an 18-year-old.
So that's, I mean, DeAndre helped Monte grow up quite a bit. So if there's a question of, can I make myself better? I don't think it hurts him coming back. It's not going to hurt him from an age thing. It's just, you only have so many years to make money too. So when people ask, well, why would he go to the NBA? If you can make money and you only have 15 years to make money professionally, I mean, that's taking money out of your pocket. So we'll see what he does. But if he comes back, I think next year could be much better. We'll enjoy this year while we have
it. If he comes back, and this is where I want to just leave the podcast, you would look at a backcourt for Iowa State of Monte Morris, Nazmi Trulong, Matt Thomas, and Donovan Jackson, who I'm super excited about. I think he's good.
Yep, he will be.
I would say right now a lot will happen, but right now I would, in pencil, tab Iowa State as the best backcourt in the Big 12 heading into the summer. Now a lot can change. Bill Self's going to do his thing.
Sure. Nobody, with you have the best point guard, which if Monte would be, if he comes back, and then the way Matt and Naz, I mean, I don't think there's much argument there.
And then you've got legitimate depth in Donovan Jackson as well.
But it's just going to be weird to not have number 31 back
31.
On the floor. It's odd. It'd be like, you know, you're looking at a TV show and your favorite character's gone. Because that's what
it's like Kramer leaving
Seinfeld. You can't. Well, it's like Seinfeld leaving Seinfeld.
Yeah, you're right.
You can't have Seinfeld without Seinfeld.
That's a good way to end this. Brent, thanks for your time, man.
Yeah, it'll be a good night on Monday.
We'll look forward to your thoughts on the game later on. Brent will join me on Thursday night's Cyclone Fanatic radio show. The band will finally be back together at Benchwarmers in Ankeny from 6 to 7. Thanks for listening, guys. We appreciate it on a Sunday. Enjoy your senior day Monday leading up to the big festivities starting at 6 o'clock tomorrow night. So long.